Welcome in. This is Chris Temple, editor and publisher of the National Investor, and I'm joined today. Actually, it's election day here in the U.S. On the Tuesday, November 6th. I'm joined by my old friend Rudy Franck of Seabridge Gold. Rudy, thanks for taking a few minutes to join me today.
Always a pleasure, Chris. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, first of all, and I've said this repeatedly this year, my congratulations to you and your team, because in a year that has been another ugly one for the mining sector, Seabridge shares are actually up modestly on the year. In the recent past, I actually have a chart of this in my current issue that's going out tonight. I have a chart of Seabridge showing how there's kind of an upward trending channel as opposed to the downward trending channels when you look at pretty much every major producer out there. And it's because slowly but surely a lot of people are finally getting their head around the fact that you've got this monster deposit that slowly but surely is getting to the point where you're going to be able to bring in, under the right terms, a partner and get this thing toward development. Of course, we're talking about the KSM project in British Columbia, which you've been growing for quite a few years now. You're up around 39 million ounces of gold, over 10 billion pounds of copper, 180 million ounces of silver. All of it, folks, for those of you that understand these mining terms, in the proven and probable reserve category, which is as good as it gets. And beyond that, the intriguing thing that I want to start off with again, because this has been the star recently at KSM, is the newest and seemingly the most attractive now deposit, Iron Cap, where you had, as of early this year, 20 million ounces of gold and 8.6 billion pounds of copper. Now, those are in the inferred categories, but you're continuing to grow that, and you've put out some numbers recently. Tell us, Rudy, about the recent numbers and what else is coming and when there might be a new resource estimate for the whole complex, but of course for Iron Cap leading that.
Okay, yeah, happy to do so, Chris. So Iron Cap, if you look at the KSM complex, there are four deposits there that get mined sequentially. And in our current mine plans right now, Iron Cap is mined last, starting in year 40, and it's mined last because up till recently it was the smallest and lowest grade deposit that we had, so it wasn't put in on the front end of the mine plan. What we delivered last year in terms of resource growth, we added almost 15 million ounces of gold and 6 billion pounds of copper from last year's program alone. And we went back this year to look to try and find the limits of the deposit, which we have not yet found. Just last week, we announced the first two holes from Iron Cap, and one of the holes that we announced was one of the best holes ever drilled at the project, where it was 583 meters of 0.59 grams per ton gold and 0.41% copper. To put that into perspective, that copper grade is more than twice our reserve grade, and the gold grade is slightly higher as well. So our view is that Iron Cap will have a further change to the project in terms of moving it up in the mining plan, moving it perhaps in front of the Kerr deposit, which will have a big positive impact on the project's economics, not only because of the grade of Iron Cap, but also where it's situated. Iron Cap is the closest of the four deposits to planned infrastructure. Matter of fact, the twin tunnel system that will connect the mine to the mill runs right by the Iron Cap deposit. So developing Iron Cap as a block cave is going to be far more cost effective than it will be at Deep Kerr or even the cave that's planned underneath the Mitchell deposit. So we're very excited about it. We have another 12 holes or so still to announce from this year's program. And then once all the holes are in, we'll rework the models for Iron Cap, and we expect to have a new resource estimate completed sometime in Q1 of 2019.
Now, you mentioned, Rudy, the higher than historic copper grades, and something that I want you to stress for folks, because this can't be said enough. You and I were talking, aside from this recording earlier, about how a lot of the analysts and newsletter writers out there still just don't get this, even though the share price should tell them that they better wake up. The reputation of Seabridge for a long time was, yeah, you've got a monster deposit, but it's low gold grades, and until the gold price goes way up, it's going to be too expensive and not attractive enough to develop. But it's also become, in the recent past, a copper story. I mean, you can't sneeze it between, you know, what you have at KSM proven and as far as inferred resources, you know, upwards of 20 billion pounds of copper. And what people don't understand is that when you use copper as a byproduct, because you're getting that with these gold grades, now all of a sudden, instead of having a marginally economic project, you're what, at about $350 an ounce all-in sustaining cost for gold now?
That's correct. We did an updated technical report in November of 2016 that looked at a revised mine plan, basically taking out lower grade material from the mine plan that's in our reserves and replacing it with higher grade material that we found at Deep Kerr. And as a result of that change to the mine plan, the total cost of production when you use copper as a byproduct credit dropped from about $650 an ounce all in to about $350 an ounce. So basically a $300 per ounce savings. And when you apply that over 40 million ounces of material that's mined by gold, that's a lot of extra cash flow the project generates. And it's interesting, you know, the gold content in both mine plans are about the same, pretty close to 40 million ounces, but the copper content increased dramatically. In the previous mine plan, we were capturing 10 billion pounds of copper. In the updated mine plan to incorporate Deep Kerr, we're now capturing almost 17 billion pounds of copper. And that additional 7 billion pounds of copper has a big positive impact on the project's economics. Essentially, you're putting the same amount of material through the mill, so that extra 7 billion pounds of copper, for easy math, at $3 copper, generates another $21 billion of project cash flow.
Well, and that's interesting, folks, because those of you who have followed the copper market and the long-term dynamics know that arguably much more so than is the case with gold, where you're seeing peaking production, copper is really hurting when you look long term at how much more copper the world needs for electric vehicles, for other components of the green economy, and there just are not that many new deposits. Now that, in my opinion at least, is one reason why your shares, Rudy, of Seabridge have held up so well, because again, there are at least some people now that are starting to get this. And so before we move on, you know, for a few minutes to a couple of the other projects, where are you, and maybe you can't really say that much yet, but you're going to come out with another updated resource estimate early in 2019. Where are we at in terms of the next or maybe last meaningful step toward development before a partner comes in and development can actually start?
Well, great question. Always a $64,000 question. When will we get a partner in? I can tell you that we are seeing more interest now than we've ever seen. In fact, over the past 12 months, we have turned down three proposals now on joint venture opportunities. You know, we continue to tell our shareholders and others that we only get to do this once. So the terms trump timing. And we're going to hold out for the right deal for our shareholders. I'm confident we will get a deal done, and if it happens before next season begins, we probably don't get a chance to do another updated mine plan because the partner will be in running the project by that point in time. But we'll only do the deal if it's the right terms that we're looking for in a joint venture structure. And what we're looking for from our perspective is keeping a meaningful interest in the project while minimizing our capital contributions to build the mine.
Well, and folks, you can't ask for any more than that from management to try and do a good job for you. You know, some of the charts that the company has on its website and its presentation, seabridgegold.net is the company's website. A lot of the stuff I've written and our past conversations are on my own website, nationalinvestor.com. Just click on Featured Opportunities and then Seabridge. You know, the fact is that the industry right now is starving for a deposit of this size. And when you have been able to build it to where every time you raise money, it seems to be at a price above the market price, it's been accretive. As one of the charts in your presentation shows, you have built resources and reserves far faster than the share count. You've got what, just under 60 million shares out now?
Correct.
And management and insiders, major investors own a real good slug of that, so no one's going to come in through the back door on the cheap and try and take this out. And I like the way you put that, Rudy. You only get to do this once, and with a monster like this, you need to do it right the first time, and I know that that's what's on your mind. Real quick, in just a few minutes, I want to do at least a little bit of justice to a couple of your other projects right now. We talked earlier about the new discoveries in Courageous Lake. That's another of the assets of Seabridge up in the Northwest Territories that might be relevant down the road. Nice property, but remote. It's going to take more work. Nearer term, you're going to have news on two others coming out, though. First is Iskut. You acquired that property, which is, 30 clicks or so northwest of KSM from Snip Gold. You've done some drilling there. Tell us what we might be hearing before too long on Iskut.
Yeah, so Iskut is an interesting opportunity. It's very similar to when we bought KSM back in 2000 from Placer Dome. It's a known large porphyry system. In fact, we have 2.2 million ounces of gold in terms of measured and indicated resources there, and about 1 billion pounds of copper. The footprint of Iskut and the size of the system is as large, if not bigger, than what we have at KSM. And historically, there's been two high-grade mines real within the claim block that were mined historically by Barrick and a much smaller company. They were mining ounces at about 1 ounce per ton head grade. You know, people forget that at KSM, we actually share a mineral system with Pretium, our next-door neighbor. They have the very high-grade top of the porphyry system. We have the bulk mineable porphyries and now the higher-grade feeder zones. At Iskut, we believe we have the potential to uncover not only porphyry-style mineralization like we have at KSM, but also pretium-style mineralization. And our focus over the past couple of years has been to try and find where the epithermal top of that system is. Last year, we had some success in terms of looking at a zone called Quartz Rise, where we got some interesting gold numbers back. We went back with some more geophysics this year and some more drilling. We are waiting on the drill results to come in on that. But the opportunity at Iskut is, it's amazing. It really could be another KSM in the making with pretium-style mineralization there as well.
Well, that's neat. I look forward to getting that news. You mentioned earlier that you may have some of the drill results by year end.
Yeah, I would expect to have that back. It's been a very slow year this year in terms of getting assay results back, not only for us, but most companies. There's been one large company in Canada kind of flooded the assay labs in Canada, which has slowed down everybody else's assay returns. But that seems to be coming, turnaround seems to be improving now. So we expect to have some assay results back at Iskut, as well as what we learned this year, probably early December.
Good, good. And then lastly, the project in Nevada that you acquired from John Paulson, his firm, a while back, and I'll remind you folks, I've mentioned this before, that you know the hedge fund guru and billionaire investor John Paulson has actually been leading a kind of reformist type of charge against the gold mining industry because he thinks that there's been a lot of mismanagement, a lot of poor treatment of investors and so forth. And so again, it's a feather in your cap, Rudy, that of all the companies that have got some exploration muscle and juice, for him to put his project in, he chose Seabridge. Now, you've been doing some work this summer down at Snowstorm, very attractive prospect down there in Nevada. What might we be hearing from that soon?
Yeah, so this year we did geophysics to kind of look underneath the tertiary cover, as well as put together all the historic data that was generated by John Paulson and previous owners to build a 3D model, per se, that has all the information available, with the idea that it'll generate drill targets. And we're pretty confident in what we've seen so far that we will have targets to go after next year. And I would expect that our maiden drill program will happen at Snowstorm in 2019.
Neat. Well, a lot of stories here, folks, a lot of moving parts. Of course, KSM being the flagship property that we may see some more steps toward development in a not too distant future, and here again, besides a lot of people not really understanding how good the economics are getting with KSM, you've got three other major attractive prospects that I think a lot of people are asleep on. So not as many as there used to be, as evidenced by the share price this year, and there's a reason for that. So folks, check it out, Seabridge Gold on the Toronto Exchange The symbol is SEA. On the New York Exchange, it's SA. Rudy, thanks so much for joining me again today, and we'll look forward to another visit when more news comes out.
Always a pleasure, Chris, and thanks again.